This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. I wish we would have started this episode about 5 minutes earlier.
I'm glad we didn't.
Yeah. I will say this. I agree with you. A good bowel movement to start off the day is, dude, let me ask you a question. At our age, what is better, first thing to wake up to in the morning? You and your wife, or a big old bowel movement that just sets the tone?
I'll take me and my wife every time, but the having a good BM is a close second.
Okay. Yeah. I would also agree. I would also agree that I like, yeah, don't get me wrong, a good bowel movement's awesome, but I think there's more in this world than just good bowel movements. I think we can agree on that. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if I'd be down for combining the two somehow, but
dude, there's people out there that do.
I have no doubt.
Okay. This is the Man Therapy Podcast. My name's Dan. His name's Kyle. And I'm going to start things off with a little current situation that we went through. Me and my daughter traveled to Indianapolis, Indiana for her second ever national event, and she was chosen by the state of Iowa to participate on an invite only team where her and a group of girls across all different weights went to Indianapolis to participate in the National Freestyle Duels Wrestling Tournament, and it was awesome. Right. We were able to go and see freestyle wrestling from, you know, all different levels. My daughter destroyed a couple girls, and then she also got destroyed by a couple girls. Right. And a couple things I want to talk about here. One is social media. And I posted on social media all of her wins, but I also posted all of her losses. And I had a couple people reach out to me and be like, dude, I think it is awesome that you are posting the, not just the highlights, but the lowlights of this too. Because every time you scroll through social media, dude, it is only the best part of people's lives. Right. And there's some people out there that I don't know if they get this or not. Like if I just posted my daughter winning all those matches, people would think like, oh my God, she is the greatest wrestler ever. And she's not, right? She's not that yet. And so, or hey, check out this person's house, or check out this person's car, or this, their life. They're at a beach. Meanwhile, what they don't post is maybe their relationships are deteriorating, or maybe this person has a severe illness, or they're in a bad, you know, like a abusive relationship, or all those things. And there's this, people get an idea in their head, and that idea is totally wrong because of social media. And I thought that was cool that people, like, I think almost people have it wrong. I think people want to see the positives, but people also want to see the negatives in life too, because it is extremely relatable. Everybody fails. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I think maybe less than people want to see the negatives. I think it's refreshing to see reality. Like, oh, yeah, 100%. I think what, you know, there's a term called this, a social highlight reel.
Yep.
Where we're, like you said, we just post the things that make us look good.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't post the things that aren't as flattering to us. So we only post the flattering things and not the unflattering things. And for you to post a good, like a match of her working her ass off and wrestling her heart out, and it just didn't go her way, like, that's reality. And that's not bad, and it's not negative at all. It's just not the highlight reel. And so it's neat because you know, by doing that, you're kind of showing like, hey, all of this is worth it.
Yeah.
All of this is valuable. Like that those matches that you lost, if you gave it your all, that's just as valuable as a match that you won.
Yep.
You know, or if you lost a match and it's because you didn't work that hard, then there's a lesson there. And if you won a match and you didn't, you know, work that hard, then there's also like, that's also not that impressive of a victory.
Right.
You know, so yeah, I think, I kind of wonder if we'll ever make a shift away from the social highlight reel to more of a reality. You know, the internet, social media still is fairly new. And so it's developed how it's developed up to this point, but that doesn't mean that there couldn't be some sort of revolution where people get sick of how things are things differently. And I really hope that they do, because I think the social highlight reel is, to use like a saturated buzzword, I think it's really toxic.
Oh, 100%, dude. It's not only toxic to the people who are doing it and basically lying every single post, right? It's also toxic to the people who view that and go, I want that, right? Oh, and then they get jealous of that. And then there's some resentment or towards whoever else can't provide that thing to them.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's a poisonous, toxic two-way street.
I completely agree. So I call that social cherry picking.
Yeah.
Where like, let's say that you have nothing else cool in your life, but you've got a cool truck. I'm like, all right, I want Dan's cool truck. And then let's say I've got another friend that like doesn't have anything else that cool, but they've got a really cool house. I'm like, well, then I want that guy's cool house. And then let's say that there's another person that I know that like has nothing really much else going for them, but they went on a cool vacation. I'm like, well, and I want that vacation.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, dude, life is not a buffet where you just get to go and like cherry pick the best things from everybody else's life and think that you want that. Oh, they remodeled their kitchen. I want to remodel my kitchen. Oh, they got a new car. I want a new car. Oh, they got a new this. I want a new that. It's like, no way, man. Look at your budget and then make your plan for your family and then execute it.
Man, how do you communicate with people like that though? Like, I don't even know what to say to those types of people. Like, I told you the story about the dude with the watch, right? Like, I'm almost positive I told you this in a previous episode, or could have been on a different episode. But I went out and met this guy his wife and then another couple. This was a long time ago, even before I was married. And this guy he had this watch on and he was so proud of it. And he was just he would shake his watch so you would see it. And then you would ask a question about it. Oh, hey, that's a nice watch, right? He would be like this in your face.
Like revving your engine. It's like revving your engine in your car so people look at
it. And then you learn about that this guy cared more about his own appearance than his wife at that point. And I was like, God, that's a sad, what a sad existence. To always want, like, I get it. If you live in the slums and you live in a dirt floor and you have no running water or things like that, and you want more, by God, go out and get it, right? Go out and make all your dreams come true. But there's a little recipe. It's called hard work, right? You gotta want to put in the work, right, for that stuff. And unless you're not willing to do that or sacrifice anything to get to that point, well, you're setting your entire rest of your life up for failure because you can't be happy in your own life right at the moment, which is a very hard, I don't know about you, but it's very hard for me to communicate with those types of people because I grew up not having much, man. Right. I mean, I grew up where if we got to go to Pizza Hut once a month or once every couple months and get a personal pan pizza because it was going to be discounted because I read 4 books that week, then I don't know. Do you remember Book It?
I do.
Book It pins. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and you get a free personal pan pizza of your choice. Dude, that was a big, big deal for me and my brother.
Mm-hmm.
If we got to go do that or we got to go one time, the biggest trip I ever took as a kid was me and my dad and my brother hopped on a train, and we took the train to Denver, Colorado, rented a car, stayed in a hotel, and went to Rocky Mountain National Park. That was probably the biggest vacation I ever went on until I went on my own vacations with my wife.
Yeah.
And so you got to learn how to kind of be happy in what you currently have. Cause if you don't, and you're always looking for the thing that's supposed to make you happy, you're going to be unhappy a lot of your life, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. I also think that like overspending to have stuff that you can't actually afford, I think is also a roadmap to misery. Oh, so yeah. I think your budget is the map. Mm-hmm. And so then you identify your values, and then you make a budget that reflects those values, and then you stick to it.
Yeah.
And don't you, unless, you know, I understand when people are just barely getting by, and so they're not talking about having a bunch of excess money. Fair enough. Mm-hmm. Don't make things worse on yourself than they have to be.
Yeah.
You know, I think if you want to be happier, then want less. A thing that I've tried to do, like a way that I'm trying to temper myself, is to be able to like see something I want and not get it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, hey, this thing is really cool, and then mm-hmm. set it down and walk away. Like, I don't have to have every single thing
right
that I want.
Right.
I also think that it's best if you have a budget, and then you can only buy those frivolous things if all of the important things are already taken care of.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be buying stuff that you can't afford if your bases aren't covered.
Yeah. Yep. And I agree 100%. I had to pay, I always pay in the lump sum for my car insurance because it's cheaper if I pay 6 months at a time instead of monthly. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I just dropped $1,000 yesterday, in car insurance. You know, it's just like, that's reality. You have to have car insurance to drive, right? You have to, like, there's all these things that I think, unless you're very like you have really good communication with your basically your wife or your husband, then those things need to be like, hey, just want to let you know I spent this much money on this thing because it's a necessity, right? Yeah. And I think a lot of times financially when people get in trouble is they have the nice house. They have the nice truck. They go on the vacations, and then their water heater explodes and they don't even have the money to fix a necessity in life, right?
Yeah.
But if your happiness comes from possessions and experiences, well then you're screwed. I'm sorry, but most of the time, those same people who are very adamant about having the nice things will play victim if they don't get it. Or what they'll do is they'll say, like, you need to do this for me. Or in order for me to be happy, you need to do this for me. And then that's unfair for that other person to put those types of expectations on the other person. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I think things are a lot like food.
Mm-hmm.
That they only fill you temporarily, and 100%. Then you're hungry for the next thing and the next thing and the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And that's I by the way, like as I say all this, I'm not pretending like I'm a saint and above all of this. Like I'm you know, turning the mirror on myself, turning the lens on myself to hold myself accountable to these things as well. I'm not mm-hmm. pretending like I do all of this perfectly, but I do recognize that, you know, I can get into ruts of like getting caught up in, oh yeah, there's that thing that I'm collecting, or mm-hmm. oh, that's really cool, I want that, I'm gonna get it, or like buying like a thing that I know that I a bad habit that I have is like I'll buy something that I don't really even need just because it's like a super good deal.
Oh, okay.
It's like, oh God, that's like, it's just such a trap because I don't need it. I just can't pass up on the deal.
Right.
And then I end up with a thing and I'm like, I don't even end up using it.
Right.
You know, but I got it because it was such a good deal. And I've had to reflect on that stuff and be like, dude, knock it off.
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy. I'm trying to think if I've ever done that. I don't know if I have or not. Maybe the only thing that I can think of recently would have been a pitcher's mound that I bought for the boys to practice pitching on, but I haven't even used it yet. So mm-hmm. it sits in our garage up against the wall, and I almost want to start using it now because it's just like, I'm not the person who usually just buys things to buy them. Right.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah. Okay. That's, if you, man, I just have been trying to find, this is going to sound weird. I have been trying very hard lately to, I don't even know if this is the right word. Maybe you can help me with this. Serve others. Mm-hmm. And that means no matter what, give the best version of myself to the people in my life. Whether that is my wife, my kids, even if I am frustrated with them, I'm still trying very hard to give the best version of myself with no expectations in return.
Hmm. Okay.
And it's hard to break that. Like, I've done this for you. Why don't you do that? Why aren't you doing this for me now? Right. And I'm battling through internal frustration, trying, like, dude, you know how hard it is to be the good guy and take the high road every day? Like, I'm not bragging because I'm that. I'm trying to do that. And I still drop the F-bombs when I get mad and maybe come unglued a couple times. That's right. Real. But right. It's so easy to say, fuck it, fuck this, fuck that. I hate God. This, blame it on this person or this thing. It's this thing or this person's fault while I'm having a bad day. You know how easy it is to do that?
Yeah.
But there's no winning in that. There's no like, I don't know what the word is.
Yeah, it's not empowering. It's
exactly,
it's making yourself the victim.
Exactly.
Like, well, this isn't on me. Well, it's like, yeah. It actually is. Like, your attitude is on you. Mm-hmm. Your attitude is literally on no one else.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. If your attitude, if other people could control your attitude, they would make you be in a good mood while they mistreated you. They wouldn't necessarily improve how they treated you. They would just make you be in a better mood.
Yeah, exactly. And at some point, and I hate to bring this up, but you've talked about that relationship that you were in a long time ago where you said I should have left way earlier than I did. And like how does a person bitch and complain? Now, I'm not saying this is you, but maybe you could find something within that. But how does a person complain and play victim so much, but they never walk the walk in what they're doing? Like, for example, oh, this person never does this. I'm a victim. But if you're a true victim, then you should leave this environment, or you should leave all of the bad things that you're saying. But mm-hmm. But sometimes they never do. They just, yeah. It's almost like they get enjoyment out of the complaining.
Yeah, I see it more as the complaining is like a pressure relief valve.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe there's leaving that situation would be so difficult that they're not going to do it. That complaining is like steam coming out of the kettle.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, cause I think people will stay in relationships that aren't ideal for them for a long, long, long time. Like if you can tolerate that for a long time, you likely will.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that the bigger the stakes are for getting out of a relationship, the less likely a person is to exit the relationship.
Yeah.
I also think we get into ruts and don't even realize the options that we have and don't realize that we could leave or don't realize that there are steps that we could take to better ourselves or change the situation. Yeah. I think it's almost like we get blinders on that. We don't even see these other options because it's so ingrained in us to see things how we already see them.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's interesting. But at the same time, divorce levels just continue to rise. The numbers continue to rise. So it's almost like people are, they will complain and they'll stay in a bad situation in certain instances, but at the same time, they also don't want to fight, and they're okay with using whatever it is until they go and leave their marriage, right? And to the point where they're just like, you know, fuck this, I'm out, right? And then maybe they didn't even fight for it or try it when, I mean, every statistic proves that, you know, two parents in the house, the same house, in a good marriage, the kids turn out better. That's just, all research points to that, right? Unless it's like in a very abusive type scenario, right?
Okay.
And so what I'm getting at is just like, I think a lot of people quit too. Like they don't want to fight for the person that they fell in love with because there's frustration and the lack of communication, and people just give up and they quit, and they think that all of a sudden they're going to go out there and they're going to find the perfect person for them again, which is essentially two unperfect people who have decided to quit trying to find each other again. You know what I mean? So
yeah, could be. Also, like,
all right, guys, you know me, and I love eating wild game, but I don't eat wild game every single night. Every once in a while, I'll reach for a side of beef, and that's why I trust Omaha Steaks. Because Omaha Steaks are sent directly to my door, I can keep my freezer stocked without having to go to the grocery store. It's honestly like having a trusted butcher and gourmet food shop right at your house. Last week, I pulled out their pure ground ribeye burgers for a quick grill session. The flavor and marbling was unreal, rich, juicy, and miles ahead of any average grocery store meat. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan and Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
I think that second marriages often end in divorce as well. I think it's really hard for two people to stay together forever. Just bottom line, I think that's really hard. It's really hard to share your life with another human. If you put me and my best friend in a house together for a full week with no breaks from each other, we might get a little catty with each other.
Yeah.
You know, by the end, it might start off like super fun and games, but after having long enough without a break from another person, like you need a break from them. And in marriage, you like never get a break. I don't think we get taught how to keep relationships healthy. There's no, like, unless you're lucky enough to have a really good role model for it, then I think you have to seek that out yourself. And I think that's pretty rare to seek that out. I think it's possible, because in my experience, it takes both people trying really hard to make the relationship work, and it has to be this common shared goal of we're gonna have a good relationship, and when things get hard, here's how we're gonna work through it, and here's the things that the ways in which I refuse to treat you, and here's how I demand to be treated. And I think a good marriage is like pretty selfless and pretty humble. That if I'm so, like, for example, if I'm doing something that makes my wife unhappy, and she's able to communicate that to me, I then have to be humble enough and have the ego strength to say, oh, okay, thank you for telling me that, I will change that. But I think so many people, myself included, a lot of the time, are too immature and too self-centered. And so we get defensive when the other person critiques us.
Yep.
I also think that a lot of times people don't put enough, people put a lot more emphasis on how they want to be treated and not enough emphasis on how they want to treat the other person or how the other person should be treated. Mm-hmm. So everybody, and I'm just generalizing, like most people, they want to get their wants met.
Mm-hmm.
And that's most of what they're keeping track of. And then they're not realizing that they could be serving their partner. And man, to me, the best relationships are the ones in which both people are like trying to out nice each other.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I know my partner likes this and this, so I do this and this. And then their partner's like, oh, I know my partner likes this and this, so I do those things. Like that's incredible. If both people are always trying to do what's in service of the greater good of the family, that's beautiful. But I think we let little, over time, I think minor irritations compound, and then we get in these little ruts, and the little ruts become deeper and deeper and deeper if we're not careful.
Yep. 100%. 100%. And of course, like you said, the happiness scale and kids and all that pressure from having kids and working jobs and trying to live a quote unquote normal life, all that pressure builds up and that's one thing that I like. If I'm going to be vulnerable here, I would say that the one thing that I wish that I could do better would be focus on, like, to be honest, man, the marriage is the foundation of the family. If that's broken, then that overflows into the raising of the children, or the children get to see the frustration in the marriage. And that's something that I'm going to be working on. Actually, the last couple months, I told you I'm trying to be a better person in 2026.
Mm-hmm.
That's what my goal is. Like, I'm trying to focus more on my marriage and I hate to say it, but putting the kids almost second.
Yeah. Yeah. You read my mind, actually. I don't know what the research says about this, but I've heard it said that we should be putting our partner first and our kids second, or if you're religious, God first, partner second, kids third. Just because you would put your kids second or third doesn't mean they're not a high priority.
Yeah.
I think that once you do shift your focus and attention solely or in a majorly lopsided way, primarily to your kids, the relationship with your spouse starts to die.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a really good point that like all that's doing is weakening the family foundation, and that actually, it would be really good to keep your relationship with your spouse really good. And then your kids can enjoy the fruits of that.
Yeah.
To have a really solid two parents is a very, very safe situation for kids. And when kids feel safe, then they can thrive.
Yeah. 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 All right. I want to pivot just a second to something else that happened while I was at and this was the very first wrestling match of the entire week. We did 8 wrestling matches, a lot of wrestling, and instantly two parents from opposing team, one on my team and one on another team from a different state, started chirping at each other. And I don't even really know what was how it got kicked off. I think really what it came down to is a really boisterous dad yelling instructions and standing up and yelling from the stands to his daughter, like instructions and what to do. And, you know, like, good job, do this. And she was winning. Well, he was standing up and the mom behind from the other girl was like, hey, sit down, you know, like sit down. We're trying to watch this.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's my daughter. And she's like, I don't give a shit. Like, I don't care. Whatever. And I was just kind of like, it was just side noise at this point. Well, it escalated. And there was like swearing and like, and I got annoyed with it. Like, so I stood up and I looked at both of them and I said, who's taking the high road here? Like, who's going to take the high road? Mm-hmm. And, I could have easily jumped on either one's, you know, the, especially on my team's side and said, hey, dude, you're being loud. You're being annoying. You're being like all these things. And really, I think what it came down to is his daughter won, which really pissed off the other girl. And it started a whole thing, right? Right. Like, because eventually we had to wrestle that team again later that day. And the dad did the same thing, but the other mom kind of sat back and she was chill, even though I know she wanted to probably say something. I was just saying, like, who's going to take the high road here? Who's going to do it? Because this is stupid. You guys are both being stupid. And I turned around and sat down and that dissolved it. Right. And it was crazy because I had another lady from the opposing team tap me on the shoulder and just go, thank you for that. And I thought, you know what? That was like one of my good deeds today. I didn't take a side. I just let everybody know that what you're doing is unacceptable. Like, who wins here? Who wins on this? Nobody wins. And at the same time, not only do you look, because I think what I did when I said, who's going to take the high road? Nobody wanted to take the low road because it would have made them look bad.
Yeah.
Right. At the same time, just imagine your daughters out there looking up in the stands and seeing you doing that. That's ultimately embarrassing for them. And I was just like, oh my God, like I can't imagine the nightmare my daughter would go through if she saw me acting like that.
Yeah.
She would be really embarrassed about that. So
yeah. I love that, man.
It's just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a cool perspective. It's neat to have that perspective because, you know, one or both of the people in a situation like that, they've probably lost perspective. Like to be the person that's being loud and obnoxious and not realizing how it's coming off in the room.
Yeah.
Or to have not given it any thought and just like thinking that that's totally cool. Mm-hmm. It just shows a lack of self-awareness. Mm-hmm. So then you brought awareness into the situation.
Yeah. And I had to do that with my youngest son's baseball team this year as well, where the parents, this is 8U baseball, dude. Nobody gives a shit about 8U baseball.
No.
These kids can't throw three strikes in a row if there was a gun held to their head, right? And so all these parents are just like chirping at the other team. They're chirping at the coach. And this was after the game was over. And they're just like, blah, 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 blah. And I look at our stand, I go, what are you guys doing? Like the game is over. And so I don't know if I'm technically trying to do the right thing or if I'm just so annoyed with certain types of people that's the reaction that I get when those types of things happen, not because I want to better the situation, but because I'm annoyed.
Yeah. Oh yeah, man. No, absolutely. I think to me, it's that example can probably be overlaid on multiple situations, including just like a relationship or an argument, you know, at the kitchen table. I think there's a lack of self-awareness because I would bet money that if you choose any one person that was like involved in that chirping at the coach or chirping at the other team, if you could interview them completely separately out of that situation and say, hey, tell me what are all of your values when it comes to youth sports and supporting kids and da da da, I would bet not a single one of them would say, oh yeah, I think you should chirp at the other team and I think you should stir up shit and I think you should lose control of yourself at a little league baseball game. Like they wouldn't say any of that.
Yeah.
So those behaviors are not in line with their values, but the problem is that people aren't keeping their values top of mind.
Right.
Like they're not thinking, what type of person do I want to be? And then living that. They're just allowing themselves to get caught up in the flow. And I think that happens in, you know, we keep tying this back to like marriage, just because it's such a poignant one.
Yeah.
But like, I think that happens in marriages also, in all kinds of relationships, that we, if we would press pause and say, wait a minute, what type of person do I want to be? How do I want this to go? We would behave very differently than if we just allow our emotions to lead us.
Yeah.
100%. I'm mad, so I'm going to behave mad. I'm irritated, so I'm going to behave irritated.
Mm-hmm.
I feel attacked, so I'm going to shut down.
Yeah.
I feel attacked, so I'm going to be defensive.
Yeah.
Those are knee-jerk reactions. We are allowing ourselves to get led around by our emotions.
Yeah.
Instead of thinking, what type of person am I? Here's a situation. How do I choose to behave based on my values? If we would think more like that, then we wouldn't see adults acting like that.
Yeah, 100%. I saw a good thing online the other day, and the guy goes, he said something along the lines of, would you be happy with yourself on how you handle the situation if you could go back and read the transcripts of the conversation or what you said or what was done, right? And or maybe watching a video of yourself, like if there was a video of you in this house right now, would you be happy with if you were a reality television show, would you be happy with the person that you would be watching?
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Right. Oh, absolutely. The something really very similar to that I literally use is I think to myself, would I be proud of myself if my mom saw me do that?
Oh, yeah.
You know, because my mom's a very strong moral compass.
Yeah.
She's really good with right and wrong.
Yeah.
And she made that stuff real clear to me as a kid.
Oh.
And so I will literally use that method in my mind of like, all right, what if your mom could see you doing this?
Yeah.
Would you be proud of yourself? And if the answer is no, then I have to check myself.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to look at it. Okay. So I wanted to share that real quick. The other thing that, for some reason, I wanted to talk with you today about humor, okay, and what that broad spectrum looks like. And I was on the couch scrolling a little bit this morning with my cup of coffee, and a comedian, I came across a reel of a comedian telling a joke that I snickered at, but was very vulgar, very race oriented, very sexually oriented. Like, just like if it was told in a group, instead of laughing, people probably would have went, you know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so it got me thinking, like, in your opinion, like me and you have a little bit of a similar, like, laugh at everything type of mentality. Do you have any restrictions or like boundaries set in place for what is funny or not? Or how do you determine what to laugh at versus like what to be like, oh, that's the line, that's too much?
Yeah, right. I think that's a great question that we can all ask ourselves. Without having this super well thought through, just off the top of my head, I feel like laughing or being amused itself is a reflex. That's not something that we can control. Mm-hmm. But what we can control is then our next behaviors and how much we feed into something. Also, you know, I think self-control is extremely valuable, and
yeah,
you probably shouldn't say every single thought that comes to your mind. There should be some discernment. I think mm-hmm. that comes with maturity. So I think the more mature someone is, the more discerning they are. You know, I also have, I can have a highbrow and a lowbrow sense of humor. You know, yeah. I can laugh at smart comedy, and I can also laugh at really, really low level
mm-hmm.
comedy, you know. When I was younger, and definitely still part of me now, but really when I was younger, I liked like shock humor. like stuff that's funny because people are like, oh my God, I can't believe you would say that.
Yeah.
You know, and there's shock comics out there that, you know, like Anthony Jeselnik is a good example of that. Like he says stuff that's so ridiculous that people are like, oh my God. Like, so one tenet of comedy is, or why something is funny is simply because the punchline was unexpected.
Yeah.
So you might laugh at something horrible. You might laugh at a horrible punchline, mm-hmm. but you're not laughing because you think that punchline is funny. You're laughing because you didn't expect it.
Right.
So then people will set, comedians can set you up to laugh at horrible things and make it look like you're like okay with it or on board with it when you're actually not. It's just, you just did not expect them to say that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or, and you can also like see the angle that they were coming at and completely disagree with it.
Right.
So a thing that I've tried to do as I've gotten older is I just don't want my humor to be harmful to anyone else.
Yeah.
If it makes me look like a dipshit, fine. I can joke about stuff that I know that other people are comfortable with me joking about. Mm-hmm. Comfortable is not even the right word. Secure. Like if there's something like I could joke about you missing a finger because yeah. I know that you're secure about that. Yeah. But if I thought that you were insecure about your finger, I wouldn't, I would think of a lot of jokes, but I wouldn't say them. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's also like, if you're in a comedy club and you're getting offended by a joke, well, dude, you're in the wrong spot. Like, don't come to a comedy show and just be like, the first one that comes into my mind, the guy was joking about, like kids with special needs, like Down syndrome or whatever like that. And there was someone in the crowd who worked with kids with Down syndrome and they were ripping jokes about that. And then that person was like, you know, like, hey, that's, you know, like my kid's got Down syndrome and this and that and this and that, which actually made it worse because then the guy looked at him and started ripping on him. Right. And so I also think like I'm not going to rip a joke, an inappropriate joke at church, right? Or I'm not going to rip something in front of my grandma, right? Who's ultra religious or whatever. But but I do think that there's a time and place for everything, and I don't know why I wanted to discuss this because humor is one of those things where even in like your darkest times, if something bad happens to you and someone can make you laugh just to bring you out of that funk, just that sometimes that's all you need is a little funk. And so like one of the funniest things that ever happened that I've ever seen in my entire life is we were at Pike's Peak. There's a here in Iowa. There's a big overlook of the Mississippi River, and they have all these acorn trees. And this was several years ago. My wife was sitting next to me with Knox, my youngest. My daughter was out there on this swing set thing playing, and my son just got done. My middle oldest son just got going to the slide. He stood up, and an acorn fell right out of the tree, and you could see the acorn like hit the sun and just plop right on his head. And it must have hurt him because he cried. And I'm sitting there trying to comfort him and not laugh at the same time because it was hilarious. And then for a couple of years, he would get pissed when we'd tell that story. But now he's past that, and now he laughs at it with us. So, one of the other things that I kind of wanted to bring up was I watched this really cool documentary about a comedy store that was open in New York City after 9/11. Okay. And there were people, they were like, how long do we have these conversations? Like, how long until this is cool? Like, literally 2 days ago, thousands of people died blocks from here, and they're not even done getting the bodies off the street yet. How long until we can start turning that into humor and making people smile about it? And they showed this one guy who went up and he ripped a joke, like, dude, like 2 days. I believe the comedy club was on generators at the time in order to keep it on. And so people were coming in there and they were just trying to make it a place for people to go and hang out. And he ripped a joke, and half the crowd was probably just like very quiet about it. And then there was maybe like one snicker. And eventually what happened was that guy came back on. He's like, at some point, somebody has to do it at some time. And when you have something like this, I think the closer, the whole point of this was like, the closer you get to being able to laugh at a bad situation, the easier it is for you to, like heal from it and get past it. Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm going to just be very blunt here, but like, there's things that you probably would never get past though. Right. Like if your family was murdered and some guy cracked a joke about your family being murdered, I might jump on stage and murder that dude. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
And so, and so there's a time and place for everything, but I don't know, like every time that I feel sad and I laugh, dude, I just kind of get out of it. It's crazy.
Oh yeah. Yeah, totally. I think humor can be used for good and evil.
Yeah.
I think that having exposure to lots of different things in life can shape what you think it's okay to joke about or how you joke about it. Mm-hmm. I think it can reveal your blind spots. I think it can, I'm going to use a buzzword, a social buzzword. I think it can reveal your privilege.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there's to your point a minute ago about like, oh, if your family was murdered, you wouldn't want people, you might not want people joking about that.
Yeah.
Like the fewer vulnerabilities you have, the more things are funny to you.
Yeah.
You know, and then the more vulnerabilities you have, probably the more sensitivity you have.
Yeah.
And so I think that it takes a skilled comedian to not just take the low hanging fruit of using shock comedy, but to be able to joke about things that aren't offensive. I'm not saying people shouldn't ever use offensive comedy, because I mean, I think there is value in that as well. But you know, I do think about like, you gave the example of a comedian making fun of mentally handicapped people and somebody in the crowd being offended by that. Like, you know, where my mind goes is like, what if that person in the crowd, like they never get out, their lives are very stressful. You know, they're always caring for their family member who they love extremely deeply and wouldn't change for anything. But like, this was going to be their one escape to get out and blow off some steam and laugh some. And the comedian happens to make fun of like the one thing that's majorly sensitive to them. Like, for me, that's a bummer. Like it's too bad that happened like that. You know, I'm in my made up scenario, right? Yeah. It's too bad that happened like that. I do think that like, if you're going to go into public, then I think you have to be able to tolerate the chance of being offended. And then I think if you go to a comedy show, then I think you especially have to like mentally prepare yourself to be able to tolerate being offended. And it's part of being in society. And then you might have to be like, well, I liked three of those comics and that last comic was not for me.
Yeah.
You know, I also think people can bond over humor. I really agree with you that humor can cheer people up. I think that when you find someone else that has a similar sense of humor that you click with, I think that's a really quick way to bond with somebody.
Yeah.
That's a thing that I do. And I actually teach my clients to do is when you go into a new social situation with people that you don't know, just pay attention to who you think is funny or who you think is nice and just put yourself around them more.
Yeah.
And I notice about myself that I naturally gravitate towards people that are funny. Yeah. And so I just like to be around them and then riff with them when they're joking.
Yeah.
So it can be a really good bonding thing. I also know that humor can be used to test each other. Mm-hmm. So like guys especially will tease each other to see how the other person responds. And like, if I tease you and give you a hard time and you're able to like give it right back to me, or it's obvious that it doesn't bother you, well, now you've revealed something about yourself. And that is that you're pretty cool, calm, collected under pressure.
Yeah.
Like I can trust you to not get upset or frazzled or easily triggered. Like you're, if I test you by teasing you and you pass the test by not getting upset,
yeah.
Then I know that you have a certain level of mental strength.
Yeah.
If I tease you and you start getting all upset and all like, whiny and crying about it, well, then you've also revealed something about yourself that you're sensitive and that people can push your buttons and that you can be manipulated in that way.
Mm-hmm.
That's something to keep in mind. I think some people would say that they have less trust in that type of person. That they might see that person as someone that they're going to have to put energy into managing,
yeah,
in the future, as opposed to someone that they would see as like a teammate that they can depend on.
Yeah. Another thing that I've noticed in just like watching my kids grow up and play sports is you get to see all different types of people, right? And then there's a guy like me who rips a couple jokes or says something that's not necessarily offensive, but like, I don't know, like just edgy, maybe a little bit edgy or something, which people who never would say that, instead of getting offended, they actually feel more comfortable around you. Doesn't mean that they are changing.
Right.
It just means that they're now more comfortable around you because you've teed something off verbally, or joked around about, a serious scenario. Like, for example, the big one is like, your batting average is 180 and your bat is $400, you know what I mean? So, you rip a joke like that. And then someone who is very straight and narrow hears that and they kind of maybe chuckle a little bit. Maybe it's in the inside.
Yeah.
But that's a bonding moment that now they feel more comfortable around you. They're not changing. They don't have to change. I'm not going to change, but it's something that allows people to get a little closer together.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I think each time you do that, it's a little bit of an experiment. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of a test, to see how people would respond. I also know that it's true that usually you don't know where the line is until you step over it.
Right.
and once that's done, you can never take it back.
Exactly.
I know that there's a lot of people in my life that like me because of my sense of humor. And I also know that over the course of my life, I have turned a lot of people off because of my sense of humor. And so then I've kind of had to, for the longest time, I was just like, well, then that's on you. If you don't like me, that's on you. I still have a lot of that sentiment, but I think one way in which I've matured is what I mentioned earlier about like, what am I willing to joke about?
Mm-hmm.
I think the more I've gotten exposed to in life, I think the less I take the low hanging fruit of, the less I take low hanging fruit, generally speaking, in what I joke about, but I'm also a little more careful about saying offensive things. Just cause I know that it can, I want to be a skilled enough communicator to be able to make people laugh without just using chalk humor.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. And that's what I used to be like back in the day. Like I would say some crazy shit just to get a reaction out of people.
Oh, me too. Big time.
Yeah. And, in our little friend group, a lot of it would maybe be like politically charged, or say something, about that just to get a reaction from the people who were different than me. And I would get a kick out of it. Maybe they didn't, but then you kind of know, right?
Yeah.
What was I going to say?
Real quick though, to be able to skillfully joke about something that you know the other person doesn't think is funny. And then to be able to like get them to warm up. I think that's a great skill. And I think around politics can be a really good way to do that too. I think, it's fun when two people can connect across the aisle because they appreciate a gentle ribbing.
Right.
You know, like you make, you poke fun at me, I poke fun at you. Like, okay, I can let my guard down a little bit.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So I didn't do the job.
And that, dude, that's like becoming friends, right? Finding a way to become friends. Have you, in your profession, have you ever like said, you know what, dude, you need to laugh. I want you to go home and watch Step Brothers, or I want you to go watch a funny movie or do something a bit ridiculous to try to lighten. Cause I feel like there's some people in this world who they're just tense all the time and they walk through life like a stone and they need to just relax a little bit.
Yeah. No, I actually haven't done exactly that. I like that. I think that'd be a good homework assignment. That'd be a good prescription.
Take one Step Brothers and call me in the morning.
Yeah, that's right. Go home, watch Talladega Nights and come back and tell me how you feel.
Exactly.
Shoot me an email.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's awesome. That's a good idea. I might have to start doing that. I have definitely suggested that people like call a friend that they like or call, you know, connect with somebody that usually puts them in a good mood. But yeah, I do think prescribing a funny movie is a great idea, actually.
What about environment, right? Like there's stressors of this world where like work or the family just like on the go all the time. And you never have time to just kind of sit on your own couch and just chill or relax. How do you change? How do you suggest a person? I don't know if it's change the environment or how do you change what the environment, how the environment makes you feel? Is there a method to that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think you and I are on the same wavelength. My thoughts were already going that direction. One thing that I try to encourage clients to do, and I try to encourage myself to do, is to decide to make today a good day, no matter what. Mm-hmm. Like I say, do not let your mood be dependent on what's going on.
Yeah.
You decide what your mood is, and then you take that with you into whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
And when I've really noticed when I do that for myself, I have a way better time.
Yeah.
If I just decide to be happy, and it's like, if I can remind myself that, especially if I know that I'm already starting to get a little irritated, or I notice I'm falling into the rut of irritation, if I can remind myself like, hey, Kyle, make today good, like decide that it's going to be good. And then you make that happen for yourself. Dude, I get a little more playful in my mind. Then that comes out and I get more playful with the people around me. Mm-hmm. Then stuff starts to roll off my back. And then I'm just so much more go with the flow. And then when I'm less rigid, like you were talking about, when I'm less tight and I'm looser, little stuff doesn't bother me as much.
Right.
And then when little stuff doesn't bother me as much, that affects other people and they're able to kind of like loosen up too. And then all of a sudden, like the tension starts to dissipate.
Yeah.
I think it's freaking awesome to decide to be in a good mood no matter what, or be in the best mood you can be no matter what, and try as hard as you can to not let your mood be situation dependent.
Have you ever noticed or had an experience where you were trying really hard to do that and it actually maybe backfired and pissed off someone else in your life bubble that you were going, you know what, I'm making today a good day. They weren't having a good day, and seeing you in a good mood pissed them off even more.
I don't know. I could see that being a thing. That's probably happened, but I can't put my finger on a time that it has. But
I can see certain people in this world just getting pissed off that this person's in a good mood. Mm-hmm. Right. And for some reason I see that in big cities. Like, I opened a door for a lady in a very populated area this week. Actually, it was yesterday. And it was like she had never had someone open the door for her. And she was like, almost she wanted to say, get out of my way. But then she realized that I opened the door for her. And she was like, oh, yeah.
Right.
Like she didn't know what to say, because it like is so rare in these packed areas of people that everybody's in it for themselves.
Yeah.
And Dude, it was, I laughed at it a little bit because she was just like, what just happened? What is this person do something nice for me? I'm not used to having somebody do something nice for me, a stranger do something nice for me.
Right.
But then, so we went into the gas station, we came back out and I got a smile out of her later on. Like when I looked back at her, she smiled at me and I think it was so crazy for her that it took her several minutes to absorb that and be like, wait a second, this person did something kind to me. Just open the door. Right.
Yeah.
And it was the same thing, and followed her were two guys who were in real dirty clothes. Like they had been doing construction work, and I opened the door and they were just very quiet and they had mean mugs on their face. And I said, hey, it looks like you two worked harder than I did today. A little comment like that. And they're just like, you could just see this face melt off them. And they're like, yeah, man, you know, we're working, you know, a lot long hours or whatever. And then there was a little chit chat about the wrestling shirt that I was wearing and things like that. And it kind of defused tension, but it was something that a person had to lead with in order to do that, to change the tone of anything like that. So,
And you're realizing you could be that.
Mm-hmm.
And you also realize, I mean, you already alluded to this, but you also realize that it's not always going to go your way.
Right.
It's worth trying the majority of the time. You could make a case for definitely the majority of the time, with the risk of you might actually end up pissing somebody off because they're in such a bad mood that really then makes them mad.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
But
100%.
I do think it's worth it. It's worth it most of the time. Sometimes it's probably not the right thing. You have to be able to read the room. Maybe it's not the time to joke, but man, still somebody that's skilled can crack the right joke in even a really tough situation. And that's really impressive. That maybe you've heard this. I saw an interview with the Wayans brothers, and they were talking about, they were at a family funeral because one of their family members had passed away, and they're standing there at the casket looking at the body, and everybody's really somber. And then one of them said, man, if there's a dress code in heaven, this guy isn't getting in. They're all just they start cracking up at the, at the wake. And it's like, dude, that was well done.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he knew his audience.
Yeah.
So he knew that joke would probably land, but
this is hilarious. Cool. Like every time I've been to, usually if it's an older person, like when I mean older, I mean someone who you knew they were going to die, right? Like this person's in their late 80s or 90s and they die of old age, whatever. That's usually an okay laid back environment of a funeral, but I've been to some other funerals that were unexpected, from some younger people. And those are really hard to lighten the mood with, but once you do, And I think my dad knows this, because my dad, he goes, hey, listen, and this is something he has beat into my brother's head and me and my brother. He goes, when I die, I got my funeral taken care of. The only thing you guys have to do is play Spirit in the Sky by Norman Greenbaum at my, when I die and they lay me to rest. You know that song?
Yep.
That's what I want at my funeral.
Yeah.
And I'm like, imagine that. Like any tension that there would be there would be broken because of that song being played loud for everybody to hear.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a beautiful thing. I also, I don't know exactly where I stand on this, but I will just share my thoughts that I don't know that the mood doesn't always need to be lightened. You know, sometimes a grieving person just needs to grieve. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's okay to just feel down and sad. So, you know, I don't know that we're going to be able to hash out when to do that and when not. Maybe that's the thing to sense. But I think people who are funny are kind of notorious for using humor to not have to feel other difficult feelings. Dan's pointing at himself for those of you that can't stand to look at him. I think that a person that is funny and is naturally funny does also probably need to be a little careful to be self-aware to make sure to feel their feelings and also not rob other people of the opportunity to feel their feelings.
Yeah.
It is okay to lighten the mood. It's also like the mood doesn't always need to be lightened though.
Yeah.
So just make sure that it's not so one-sided that you're always rescuing yourself from having to feel the deeper stuff.
Yeah. And I think as a kid, that's the direction that I went. When life at home, like when my parents got divorced and I was, you know, my, I was living with this other guy that my mom had married and nobody liked him. Like my brother and I didn't like him. And so we had our own way of dealing with what was going on in life. And mine was humor to the point where it was getting me in trouble. Everything. I never took anything serious.
Yeah.
It was jokes about everything all the time. But ultimately what it was, is it was my defense mechanism.
Yep.
For handling how I'd get in trouble all the time in school because I was joking around, never took anything serious. And that I look back now and I think that was my defense mechanism for, I don't even know if like, I hate to use the word trauma because maybe that's what it was, but when I hear trauma and then compare my trauma to other people's trauma, I go, I didn't have trauma. Right. But it is what it is, different experiences. And so I know that I used humor to kind of mentally get myself out of a place that I didn't want to be at.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Couple things I want to say. Just one real quick about trauma that I appreciate is the distinction between like capital T trauma and lowercase t trauma. Mm-hmm. So capital T trauma would be anything that like anyone on the planet would say, oh yeah, that's traumatic. Like if you watch someone get murdered in front of you, or if you went through like some horrible natural disaster, or you were kidnapped, like anybody in the world would go, oh yeah, that's traumatic. Mm-hmm. So that's a capital T trauma. Then a lowercase t trauma is something that was impactful to you.
Right.
And happened to land on you in the way that it did. And to me, divorce is the classic example. Like
100%.
Some kids whose parents get divorced, they're like, yeah, it's probably for the better because they argued a lot and now they don't. And life is actually better. And I do get to see both my parents plenty and it's fine. And for other kids, divorce just totally rocks their world. And that's not to say one kid is stronger than the other kid. It's just that it affected them differently. So there's a capital T trauma and a lowercase t trauma. And a lot of people who experience the lowercase t trauma, they struggle to identify it as a trauma because it's not a capital T
it's
trauma.
It's not huge. It's not, it's like,
so they feel bad. They're almost like embarrassed or, you know, whatever, too humble about it.
Right.
So I just wanted to throw that out there. Like if there is something, instead of the word trauma, because that's kind of loaded, we could just say impactful. Like, yeah, that affected me.
Yeah.
That impacted me. That affected me. So like trauma is a loaded word. So I just wanted to parse that out a little bit. But back to the idea of humor, like humor can absolutely be your armor so that things can bounce off of you, so that you can let things bounce off of you. I also think that humor can be like brake pads, like it's a consumable. Like humor is like the food that you throw out so that the monsters eat that instead of you. Like if you're trying to protect yourself, it's like, hey, I'm going to distract you with all of this stuff so that you don't get to the stuff that would actually bother me.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. All right. So you mentioned something and I kind of want to talk a little bit about this next week. Because you brought up something that is interesting to me, especially when you're talking about therapy or you're talking about finding ways to get out of sadness and be happier. Like that's what a lot of the conversations that we have communicating with others to try to find even keel or whatever. But you mentioned something that I want to talk about next week a little bit. So write this down in your notes if you if you want. And that is, when is it okay to be sad? Because I think there's a time and a place for it, right? And you can't just like imagine your best friend dying in front of you and you just shook it off and went about your day the next day, right?
Yeah.
And you something in there needs like maybe a grieving process or something like that. So I think that would be maybe a great conversation for next week and give us something to talk about then, man. What do you think?
I made a note.
Made a note. Perfect. Anything else we need to chit chat about before we let them go today?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, I'll say this, go out and try your hardest to have the best possible day that you can have today and crack some jokes today. Maybe if they're even dumbass dad jokes, crack them. I don't know. Give it a shot.
I agree. I will do that. You do that too.
I will. All right. I'm going to go do it to my wife who will not laugh at him, but I'm going to do it anyway. So, all right. Good vibes, everybody. And we'll talk to you next week.